Good morning. Well, that doesn't sound like good news, the gospel today. And in 40 years of preaching, I've usually skipped the gospel from Luke about Jesus starting a fire on earth and predicting fathers against sons and mothers against daughters because I don't like conflict. But I also know that conflict avoidance can make matters worse. So when I was at the opportunity and privilege to speak to you today, I had to dig in. My question is, how can this gospel from Luke give us good news? As I read and reread the gospel and the epistle in various translations, what we read in the service this summer is called the Message translation, and it sheds some light. I've come to change everything, to turn everything right side up. How I long for it to be finished. Jesus knew his teaching would be disruptive to the world order. In fact, they were expecting the end of the world. But he had faith that God was in charge. And some people do like conflict and serious debate and even fighting. I met a young Palestinian man many years ago in a New York City hospital who, his main complaint was because of his illness, he could not join his friends to fight with Israel. We have a 19-year-old grandson who loves to debate. He's always trying to get me into a debate with him. He was captain of his high school debate team, where they have to prepare both sides of an argument, which I think was a great thing for him. He was less sure of himself when he had to know both sides. But anyway, I've been thinking about why I'm so uncomfortable with conflict. I think it makes me feel guilty, as if a person shouldn't have a conflict. But when you think about it, that's ridiculous. All people have conflicts. All churches experience conflict. Homeowners associations. People laugh for that. Schools, human institutions. The real question is, how should we handle conflict? What good can it produce rather than making things worse? And most of us today are painfully aware of how politically and culturally divided our country is, and indeed the whole earth. And we worry about it, perhaps sometimes feel overwhelmed, embarrassed, discouraged, or even guilty. Which turned me back to the epistle for today. The epistle to the Hebrews, which was less than 200 years after Jesus' death and resurrection, the church was already divided in itself and persecuted by dominant factors. They had expecting the second coming of God's kingdom, predicted by Jesus and Paul, to be imminent, but it was delayed, and they were discouraged. So the early Christians who initially heard the Hebrews had both types of fear, which last Sunday Travis described in his sermon, fear from the outside, like spiders. Or in their case, the fear from the outside was being thrown to the lions. And they had fear from the inside, like fear of failing or disagreement with those we love. Because you can be sure that in families, there were some people who were ready to go to the lions and others who didn't want to do that. So they had a lot of conflict. And as encouragement, the writer of Hebrews reminded the people of the past troubles and how faith eventually paid off. Walking through the Red Sea on dry ground, marching around the walls of Jericho for 7 days before the walls came down, and many other instances in Hebrew history. We could sum up the letter of the Hebrews with the word perseverance. So now, 2,000 or more years later, humanity is still struggling, as is the church. We have a different understanding of the coming of God's kingdom. We've begun to understand that it begins with work within us. But the conflicts continue, especially in the news media, each side automatically casting bad motives on the other. I'm old enough to remember this is not new. And I just think that taking the side of hatred is not a good idea. I also see and know people, in fact, many sitting in this room, who walk gracefully a middle road, working on themselves and their quickness to misunderstand, and working on the outside to help those in need. If you enjoy reading, as I do, and it's one way I cope with all of my feelings, I want to recommend a book to you. I've got it. It's Miracles and Wonders by Elaine Pagels. She traces the historical Jesus and the mystery of why his teachings and life have such an enormous effect on humanity, even today, and continues to save people around the earth. She doesn't flinch from critics, past and present, who, for instance, have denied the virgin birth and the resurrection. She deals with all of that. And she examines all the rumors and reports of Christians as well as critics. And she brings up to the present time the saving effects of the good news for many people around the earth, which I was unaware of, like the untouchables in India, who are told now by Christians that Jesus called them beloved children of God, and they flocked to Christianity. And there are other places remote on the earth that I had not heard of that Christianity is taking hold, including places in America. She is surprised that in our secular society, at the continuing power of Jesus' presence and of his words and of good works done in his name and of liturgies and art. In fact, I heard about her book by reading a very secular magazine, The New Yorker, an article written by the excellent Jewish writer Adam Gopnik. And so I immediately got the book. She brings in the works of artists, filmmakers, and poets who are less concerned with getting Jesus right or the creed or all of our beliefs in line than to invite imagination and spiritual insight to explore and play with the gospel stories, reinventing as they go. She highlights three films. I've only seen one of them. Have any of you heard of a movie called The Son of Man? It was 2006, and it's a South African movie. I want to track it down because it sounds like it would be good. Then there's Martin Scorsese's The Last Temptation of Christ, and another one, a 2018 movie by, I think she's an English woman, Helen Edmondson, called Mary Magdalene, which puts a whole new halo on Mary Magdalene. Like the writer of Hebrews, Dr. Pagels also highlights just some of the heroines and heroes of the faith today. And I found that profoundly moving. But let me say, first of all, many of you are sitting here who are doing exactly that. She talks of countless people who take Jesus' teachings and life as a template for their own. As example of famous people, Martin Luther King Jr., and his lifelong immersion in the Bible. Jimmy and Rosalind Carter, who long after his presidency were joining crews to hammer nails into new floor habits for Habitat for Humanity. And I know many of you volunteer for Habitat in Teton County. Bishop Desmond Tutu, who declared that his country would have no future without forgiveness. That's another good book, as Jesus taught it, when he initiated the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa. And Pope Francis, who went into migrant camps to welcome newly arrived Muslims and visited prisoners in jail, and offered blessing to those his church had previously shunned because of their gender differences. All these recognize that Jesus' teaching is as radical now as it was then. And sometimes conflict is not radical in our daily lives. Sometimes it's not even political, like family difficulties and disagreements between friends. But that still hurts. I hope some of you may be curious enough to read, I'll say the name again, Miracles and Wonders, but most of you will not. So I'm going to read you some of her conclusion because I want to give you the joy that the gospel gives me, which you can't pick up from just reading the gospel, this particular gospel. She wrote, "As I reflect on this study for this project, what fascinates me is not only the historical mysteries my book seeks to unravel, but the spiritual power that shines through the stories. This passionate, charismatic, first century rabbi interpreted the Genesis creation story that God created humankind in his image to mean that every member of the human race is of sacred value. Other moral teachers, like Plato, had recommended helping people in need, but only people of one's own status, certainly not indigents, the poor, or people enslaved. And other rabbis of Jesus' time preached, as he did, the scriptural injunction to love your neighbor as yourself, but primarily just for Jews in his own community. Jesus shocked his listeners by urging them to give compassion and practical help to anyone who's sick, in prison, or hungry. To a disgraced and ungrateful son, you know what story that refers to, or even to an enemy. Starting in a world filled with challenge, oppression, and suffering, the stories shift, often suddenly, into hope. Hebrew scriptures had set the pattern for such shifts. People enslaved were set free. A shepherd boy named David kills a hostile giant with a slingshot. Hungry lions spare Daniel's life, and Jonah emerges alive from the belly of a whale. The point is as clear as lightning flash. God can make a way out of no way. God can make a way out of no way, transforming what we suffer and every conflict into joy. Is that what keeps these stories of Jesus alive today amidst the twists and turns of history and all the secular culture that we're bombarded with? These stories give us what we most need, an outburst of hope, an awakening of faith. Amen.